Welcome to The Other Side of the Plate, brought to you by Feast, families empowered and supporting treatment of eating disorders. This podcast is for moms, dads, and caregivers searching for answers, the kind that can feel so hard to find when your loved one has an eating disorder. I'm Jenny, and along with my co-host Laura, we're here as caregivers with lived experience who supported our loved ones through an eating disorder. Together, we'll share personal insights, connect you with professionals, and point you toward helpful resources. And as we say at Feast, we're here because we've been there. The content contained in this podcast is not a substitute for professional or medical treatment, and it may not represent the views and beliefs of Feast. Always consult a medical professional for medical advice and treatment recommendations.
Hello, welcome to The Other Side of the Plate. I'm one of your hosts, Laura Cohen. I am doing a solo episode without my awesome co-host, Jenny. You all just have me today, but it's not actually a solo episode. I have one of my favorite guests in the whole world because I can say she's one of my favorite people in the whole world. My daughter.
Hi.
This is Alexa Cohen. And I'm pretty psyched to have her here. I really want to thank you, Alexa, for giving me the approval and the okay to come on your mom's podcast for Feast and to being open, to being vulnerable. Cause you know, this is not always the easiest stuff to talk about. And that, you know, knowing that the listeners out there are going to be hearing your story and you've been so brave, always have been ever, you know, since we started this journey, really sharing your story to help others. So I just want to give you a big, big thanks from Feast and from myself and from the podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So Alexa is zooming in from her own apartment. It's kind of weird. So Alexa is now 22 years old. She was diagnosed when she was 16 and a half. But what we want to talk about today is something that, you know, when I've been in the eating disorder world and also just living through it as a caregiver, one of the biggest things that I hear over and over again is caregivers, parents, so scared to do any type of treatment or set boundaries or, you know, set limitations, whatever it may be, because it's going to ruin the relationship with their kiddo. And I was scared of that. I'm not going to lie. You know, you're put in a different, you know, situation. You're also scared. You don't know what to do. And you're so scared that everything you do is going to damage that future relationship with your child, which is completely understandable. And going through it, it wasn't easy. I think Alexa can agree to that. It wasn't easy. But I can tell you now, years later, in recovery, and even in the past couple years, that our relationship is probably stronger than ever. Would you agree?
I would agree.
You would agree. And we like each other, and it didn't ruin our relationship. So it's just something that I see over and over again in the forums and the Facebook groups when I was working with families that they didn't want to hold those boundaries because they were so, so scared that it was going to just ruin the relationship. Because it, you know, as you have kids that are getting older, they're supposed to be, you know, more independent. They're supposed to be by themselves and growing and maturing and all of that. And then you throw an eating disorder in and it just changes that dynamic. So it makes perfect sense why parents and caregivers are scared to shift that. But that is unfortunately what happened. So we're going to go back into Alexa's story. Let's take it back, Alexa, to 2020. The world is in lockdown. And you had a rough year before the world was in lockdown. Take us back to like between the ages of 13 and 16, before we knew you had an eating disorder. If you can kind of go back and tell us a little bit about what Alexa's world felt like. You know, as a mom, I knew some things that were going on, but I didn't really know what was going on. Definitely learned more about it as years went on. But if you could share a little bit about what life was like before anyone knew you had an eating disorder.
Yeah, I think I also didn't know what was going on. I had never seen really anything about eating disorders. I mean, there was one girl at my gym that had, I did gymnastics, I don't know if we said that, had an eating disorder, but I didn't really know what it was. It was never really taught in school. And So I thought what was going on was just normal teenage stuff.
I was going to say, what was the first time you felt that something was weird?
I don't know if there was like a first time that, like a moment that I was like, I think something's going on. I think it was gradual. And I think being in lockdown really made things exponentially worse, is like, I wasn't allowed to be social with other people other than online. You know, we were stuck in the house with the same four people all day, all night. But yeah, I kind of online saw like people doing like those workout trends and like making all these like recipes that were like quote unquote healthy. And I was like, oh, like this is just like normal like stuff. Like this is okay. And I kind of remember like towards the beginning of quarantine, like I was like, okay, I'm gonna make quarantine a goal. Like I'm gonna lose weight. And I didn't think that that was a problem, because like in this day and age, like everybody wants to lose weight. That's what all the ads, that's what all social media, TikTok is telling us. And I was on my phone 24/7 and seeing that content, because that's the stuff that I would like. So that's what the algorithm did, and it pushed it forward to me. And I didn't have anything else to do, so might as well focus on my diet, focus on my exercise. But I didn't know what an eating disorder was to know that this was wrong. And I didn't realize until I started like therapy and stuff, we'll get into that, that this voice is, there's two separate things going on in my head, and what it sounded like then was just me. So that's like a lot where therapy came in to differentiate the two, because and I've now brought that into my life, and not just eating, but it just sounded like me, the voice in my head saying, keep going, like with the exercise, or just skip this, like you'll be fine. Like, and I was walking, I was
You were fine, right?
socializing, I was having my personality for the most part, especially at the beginning. I mean, we were all in lockdown,
Yeah,
so
and lockdown was different. Yeah.
nobody was all spunky and excited about it. So I just thought these things were normal, and maybe I felt a little down and depressed, but that's just because we were all in quarantine. And I don't know if that answered your question, but
Yeah, no, I think it's fair to say, like, if I'm hearing you correctly, you had this, you know, you had these voices in your head, right? But they were you. So it didn't seem like anything was wrong. And society around you, which is really no different than today, except quarantine, it was just a little more so. But nowadays, you know, now we're talking, you know, 6 years later. Wow, 6 years later. And social media is so much more than it was then. So yeah, you were on your phone more then, but I would say kids are on their phone really just as much now. And you're just being fed that content, and that's what everyone else is doing, right? So it didn't seem anything different to you. And then, from my point of view, if we're going to flip it to both points of view, what were we doing in our house? Like, we love food in our house, right? So we were cooking and we were doing fun things. And every meal, Alexa would like cry. And I was like, what the heck is going on? Like, why were meals so hard? And to your point, you couldn't hide because it was quarantine, right? You know, and you definitely like emotionally were struggling a couple months before that, and we couldn't figure it out. You know, you had some trauma in your life that year, and everything was focused. She had lost a gymnastics coach, and everything was focused towards that. So we didn't realize that it was your eating, because you always were kind of a weird eater. I mean, even when you were a young kid, you always were picky. So I remember someone actually had brought up the point that they realized you weren't eating that much. And I was like, well, that's just Alexa. Like, it didn't even faze me that there could be something wrong, because you always were kind of a weird, picky eater.
And
Who
I
knows
didn't,
when that started? And, you know.
yeah, and I didn't know that there was something wrong. People, like, I get my mom and like other people would just be like, what, like, something's going on and I just can't pinpoint it. And they would ask me, like, what's going on? And obviously, back then, I wouldn't say a word in front of literally anybody, but I was like, genuinely, I don't know. Like, I didn't know that this was a problem and this is something that could be fixed, even. Fixed in quotes. Not everything's perfect, of course, but like that there is treatment for this and there's a possibility of not feeling this way.
I remember Alexa used to say to me, and I remember this was after she was diagnosed or before, It may have even been before. And this like totally like sticks with me. She used to say to me, "There's something wrong with my brain. I just want a brain transplant. There's something that's just," and I'd be like, "What are you talking about?" And I think that that was because you were confused as what was going on, right? Like you had these weird thoughts and you just wanted it fixed. Like you didn't understand it. Quarantine, meals, she's crying all the time. We didn't know what was going on. And you and I spend a lot of time sitting on this chair that I'm sitting on right now, talking about things. Like I would be like, "Lex, what is going on?" And I remember you weren't hungry and you would just say, "I'm not hungry. Food's food. It just doesn't feel good. And I'm going to the doctor. We're trying to figure out what was going on with you." And yeah, I was a dietitian in the past. So I'm like bringing out all my high calorie foods, trying to get you to eat them. Like I was trying everything to get you to eat. I did, again, did not know that there was an eating disorder involved. So then one day you told me, well, we were crying. You were crying after a meal. And what made you finally decide to tell me what was going on?
I think I was just, I mean, I really don't remember much about it, honestly, but I think.
Hold on. That's an important thing to hear, parents. She does not remember this very traumatic point in life. No,
But
and it's serious. It's
yeah, I
important.
remember we were sitting on this chair, but like, I don't really remember exactly how the conversation went. I think I just had had enough, and I was like, I don't know, you can probably recall it way better than I can. I was
Yeah.
just so in a state that I, like, what did I even say?
You said to me, "I'm not eating on purpose." I mean, I remember exactly what happened. She was crying, and she looked at me and goes, "I'm not eating on purpose." And it was right then all the dots, well, not all of them, but a lot of them lined up. And I was like, oh. And that just started everything, or started the beginning of her recovery, rather. You know, I called the doctor, I called all the things that we're supposed to call. And I don't think that made Alexa feel any better. I think that those were really hard times. I think one of our first conversations was, "Do you want to tell other people?" And at first it was no. And within 10 minutes, I was like, "I think it may be helpful." I mean, Alexa was a pretty serious gymnast, and not serious like going to the Olympics, but serious for, you know, that it was her life. You know, she had been doing gymnastics since she was six, 5 or 6. And, you know, we told her gymnastics coach right away, you know, we wanted the support. I didn't want to keep it a secret. But tell me, how was it at that time starting to let people know? Do you remember?
I only really remember telling my gymnastics coach because it was during quarantine, and I remember her like texting me a few times, just like checking in, and she was the best, like the best to ever do it. And having her support from like someone that I had known and looked up to for years and years, and especially someone in the sport, because knowing that the eating disorder will and can affect sports, just having her on our side and being involved definitely made a difference, and just like educating her. And I knew she knew about eating disorders because of previous gymnasts, which was also obviously helpful, but just educating her, and also then her being able to help other gymnasts that can struggle in the will and can struggle in the future. But just having other people that know and are beside you other than your parents, because that dynamic is always difficult. So just having another human that knows what's going on.
Definitely. I'm a big advocate of letting, you know, the kiddos, if they're in a sport or something, letting the coach know. And if that coach doesn't understand or can't be in their corner, then that says something too, because you just have to, you know, protect. I mean, her gymnastics coach was great, but there were things that I had to educate her about. And there were lines that I had to say, "Well, Alexa can't do that," or "We can't do this." And, you know, it was just the way that it had to be. But we started FBT. Okay, mom, I went online. Here's my little feast shout out. I had no idea what to do, even though I was a dietitian. I was trained as a dietitian. Eating disorders, I did not know what to do. I went online because what else do you do when you don't know what to? We didn't even have chat back then. It would have been so much helpful. But I actually came across Feast really quickly. And that was super helpful because I learned about FBT, family-based treatment. I'd never heard of it before. And I remember reading about it because, A, we were in lockdown, which again, I know the story now is not going to be as typical, but it made sense because I was like, well, I don't want her to go to a treatment facility. Because to me, you have an eating disorder, you get sent away. Like that's all I knew in the 80s was you have an eating disorder, you send the kid away. And I was like, well, I'm not sending her away anywhere right now. So when I heard about family-based treatment, you know, which basically is the caregiver is tasked with refeeding the child, you know, really kind of just takes over all the food, the decisions, watching them eat, really kind of takes them back to them being a toddler again. But it also kept my kid at home. And I was like, well, I can do this. This is what we're gonna do. And it just made perfect sense. So all of a sudden, I've got Alexa who's feeding herself. She's 16 and a half years old. You know, she's in charge of her food and her life and all of that. And all of a sudden, there's me, who's our dad, but really me at that point, who's coming in. And I'm like, okay, you need to eat three meals and three snacks a day. This is a kid who didn't eat till 2 o'clock in the afternoon, if that. Didn't eat much during the day. And here's mom saying, you got to wake up and have breakfast. I don't care that it's quarantine and everyone's sleeping all the day. Here's 8 o'clock in the morning and mom's showing up at your bed with a big old plate of pancakes, right? And making you eat them with syrup in your bed. So tell me, do you remember those days? It was pancakes or French toast like every other day we. So tell me a little bit if you remember, like, how did it feel that you're 16 and a half years old when all your friends are doing whatever the heck they want? And now you're being told that you have to eat everything on your plate by your mother when you're absolutely terrified of food right now and gaining weight. And you were terrified to eat.
It was just a sense of like, I have no autonomy over my life. I was not only terrified, but also just pissed off that this is what it had to be. I caused a lot of fighting, which you would expect. And
A lot of crying, a lot of crying.
a lot of tears, a lot of panic. And it just felt like all I was doing all day was eating, especially because it was during COVID and there was nothing else to do. So it was like when I finished breakfast, and I would be probably slow at eating because I was scared. 10 minutes later, oh, it's snack time. Here we go. And then it was lunch, and then it was snack, then it was dinner, then it was snack. And even if there was like an hour or two in between, it was COVID and we weren't doing anything else. I was just sitting on my phone or whatever. So time went by really fast. And so I think getting used to that schedule took quite some time, and which is understandable. But yeah, I was miserable. But at the end of the day, looking back, like it saved me, and like there was no really other choice of what to do. And all the fighting and all of this panic and scared was worth it. And it was a hell of a lot better than going to treatment during COVID.
Or
In
just treatment
hindsight,
at that point, just just treatment. You know, you did start, you know, that this was over the summer, then that fall, you did go to a program. You know, you weren't making enough progress. And we did have to find you a program, which was hard during COVID because there wasn't a lot that was open. But even if it wasn't COVID, you still would be eating six times a day, right? So then you're fitting it in. And some people, you know, the kids do need to stay home. You know, they do need to stay home and eat that much food. Or if they can't get it in school or their parent is coming during lunch, you know, and taking them out of lunch, you know, all those things. But from what you're saying was it sucked. And what were the alternatives, right? Because you couldn't do it yourself. Is it fair to say if I would have said, Alexa, you got to eat more, just do it yourself, what would have happened?
0% chance that would have happened. And
Or if I just, like, every time I fought with you, I just gave in.
your child is going to be mad. They're going to hate you. 100% going to hate you. But it's their eating disorder hating you. It's not them. You know their true selves. You saw them as a child. You see them when they're not in those moments. It's not them. And I'm sure that they can see that. And at the end of the day, you're saving their life. So they can have a long life and have this not be their whole life.
Talk to me about when you first started going to appointments. You know, we went to Children's Hospital. We had all these appointments. I found you a therapist. You may not even remember the first therapist. And you would sit at these appointments and how'd they go?
Silent. You could hear a pin drop all 50 minutes.
Just wouldn't talk. Wouldn't talk. And we'd have joint family FBT sessions. And it was so stressful, like watching Alexa, because she just would not talk. She would not open up. Everything was fine. She was sitting there. You can't see what I'm doing, but like arms crossed, just terrible. I had found her a therapist that summer because in my mind, you get a therapist right away. Like I didn't know. And I found an eating disorder therapist. You know, we were on our way, and the woman was like, I'm not letting you pay me anymore because your kid's not talking. So she fired us, basically. And then, interestingly, Alexa started with a dietitian because only because there was a program that was around in our area and it was run by a nutrition place. And because I was a past dietitian, I was like, I know what to do nutritionally. We don't need that. Like, that's not the problem. But it looked like a great program. So we signed Alexa up and she met her dietitian, Melanie. And you want to talk a little bit about Melanie and if you remember that program and how you got kicked out of it?
Yeah, shout out Melanie. I literally met with her today, this morning, going on year six strong. She's the best to do it. And like, yes, she does nutrition and is specialized in eating disorders, but our like relationship is more than that. Like she's more like when I was looking for therapist, dietitian, I would always be like, I just want someone that's like normal. I want someone that can relate to me. I want like someone young.
Normal with heavy air quotes. Let's be okay. Someone who can relate to. All therapists are
Sorry,
normal.
that was
I had
probably
to politically correct my child right there.
sorry.
Yes, someone
Well,
that related to you.
someone that was young, but Melanie was exactly that. She was like basically fresh out of grad school, I think. She's young and just since literally the first few sessions, I'm sure I was dead silent, but there was just something about her that I felt safe and I felt that I was able to open up to her, and she was the first person I had ever opened up to.
And this
She
was a dietitian. This is why I want to be clear. Like, it's sometimes it's just whatever person it is that you're, as long as you trust them, that your kid feels comfortable with.
Yeah, and like there was definitely like a good period of time. Like, I mean, I didn't start meeting with my current therapist who I stuck with until that February. This was like September, August. So like I kind of just treated her as my therapist, which probably
Yes, itch.
wasn't supposed to happen, but like we were that close that I just trusted her, and that she saved my life and like still is and always will be. And yeah, she's like a friend to me, and like she'll always have a special place in my heart. And yeah, it's just like she having someone that you're able to find that's more than just someone that gives you your meal plan is it was everything.
Yeah. And, you know, as I said, and you can find that, and not everyone's going to find that, but just finding someone that you can relate to sounds like it was super important. And I think one big thing, and I do want to be clear that she was very, very clear to stay in her lane. Like Melanie and I used to talk about this. She did not treat Alexa like a therapist. There was times she'd be like, she would actually reach out and be like, okay, this is out of my scope of practice. Like Alexa was getting into some behaviors that were out of her scope of practice. And she knew, she's like, we need to get a therapist on board. It can't be me. I can't do this. Like she's always been very, very clear what, you know, what she would and wouldn't do. So we have finally did find a therapist. And the therapist, this was like a solid year into treatment. So Alexa had probably met with about four or five therapists, and all of them she just didn't relate to. There was used to say, I don't like them. And some of them actually Melanie even gave the names of. And you're like, I don't like them. I don't like them. I don't like them. And it was one after another. And then she found a therapist that she really connected with. And that was a game changer, because then we finally had a team. But just to let you all know, these providers took probably 10 months for us to find. That doesn't mean that she didn't do treatment. We were still refeeding and doing that through everything. It was just finding the right people took some time. And through this time, you were still struggling. You know, you kind of went back to school. There was hybrid, and you know, you stalled in your recovery.
Yeah, and I did that program twice that she was talking about earlier at my dietitian's office. And the first time, as she said, I got kicked out because I just wasn't making any progress. And the second
And she
time,
was triggering the other patients. I just want to be clear that my daughter was triggering the other patients. Like, I think it's important to tell these parts of recovery, right? Because recovery just is so up and down. It's so up and down. And she was trying, and you just weren't well enough. You just weren't in a place yet that you could eat with other girls. You know, there was some meals that were involved, and Alexa just spent the whole time crying. And eventually they're like, we can't have her there. And we kind of just put together, you know, again, because it was, we weren't ready to send her away, and we just amped up a bunch of stuff. And that went on for a while. And then finally we got to that place that you needed a higher level of care. Do you remember that? Like, you were, we were talking about that a little bit before. Like, what did that feel like when you finally decided you needed a higher level of care?
I remember we went on vacation that summer to the Cape, and I think that's kind of when everything started to crumble again. I mean, nothing was ever like great, but I feel like that like week or whatever, it was like, okay, like I am using these behaviors more than I have in a very long time. And at that point, I had a little bit more freedom and was able to eat more things that I wanted, and yeah. But I was obviously with my family on vacation, and I was being really sneaky and doing all the things that you do. And I think after that, I was talking with both my therapist and dietitian, and we kind of both just came to the conclusion, like, I think, like, I don't want to live like this anymore. Like, I'm going into my senior year of high school. I obviously don't want to miss my senior year of high school, and we can get into that in a bit, but I don't want to have to deal with this when I go to college. College was always very important to me. I'd always looked forward to that. I went grew up going to camp, sleepaway camp, and I always would our counselors would always tell us stories about college, and it was always like a big like dream of mine to just go to college and live on my own and have that experience. So I kind of just and I didn't love high school. The only thing I really liked about high school was high school gymnastics. And at that point, it was like August, and I was like, okay, like I won't be able to do high school gymnastics if I keep up with this, because at that point, gymnastics was slowly getting taken away again. And so we kind of just came to the conclusion that I don't want this anymore, and I need real good help. So, yeah, we.
Yeah, it was a dark time. I mean, I remember that vacation, and you know, as the parent, I was watching, and I just knew things were not looking good. You know, there was less food being eaten. There was just more meltdowns. It was just bad, and we were just all spinning our wheels. You know, like, well, what are we going to do? Because I think one thing Alexis said that was really important was that she started to get some independence back. So Alexis started to get some independence back. And then it started to get wonky again. So that's something that I always do say to caregivers, just because you get the independence back, sometimes that's a test. And it was a test and it didn't go well, right? So then it was like, okay, you have some of that independence, but now I think we need to look at something, a higher level of care, which we did. We flew across the country. I flew out there and we stayed in a hotel, and it was a really dark time. We had to leave our home, and we knew that this is what Alexa needed, but it felt so bad. It felt horrible for her. It felt horrible for me. I felt horrible for my husband, our whole family. And I was like, how are we going to get out of this? How are we going to get out of this? And, you know, it wound up not being the right fit for her, which was okay. You know, we gave it a very good try. And then as a team, we're like, no, let's bring her back home and continue at a higher level of care, but closer to home. And I think that once Alexa got home from that experience that was not positive, all of a sudden she was eating 100% of her meals. Because that's what you, that's higher level of care. As much as it may suck, there was someone else that was telling her she had to finish that meal. And Alexa started to realize, okay, this is what needs to happen. And you did it, and you got home, and it was, there was rocky times, but it, I mean, you tell your perspective, because I'm telling my perspective as a caregiver that it was awful. I hated every minute of it. And unfortunately, this really hard time was what we needed to move forward.
I mean, in hindsight, like flying across the country, like, and doing that,
And missing high school.
missing the first half of my senior year of high school scared me to death that I never wanted to do that again. And like, I feel treatment, it's not pretty for anybody. It's not supposed to be pretty. It's supposed to be, I mean, it's not supposed to be hell, but it's not, it's supposed to be awful. It's supposed to be not fun and like Disneyland. Like, it's not meant for that. It's meant so you don't want to come back and you don't want your life to be like that ever again. And when I came home, I kind of realized that like this is not what I want for myself. I want I want to live a life past this. I want to not live, be in and out of treatment my whole life. I want independence. I want to live on my own. I want kids one day. I just don't want this beast in my head anymore. And I'm sure y'all have heard this, but when I started eating properly and was finishing 100% of my meals and snacks when I was in treatment at home, I was able to function better and start to realize my true values and what I want in life, and that could be possible. And I was able to then do my whole high school gymnastics season, and which was also a huge motivator, was to get back into gymnastics for my senior year. I know not everybody has something like that, but yeah, just those motivators are really important, and to just look at your future as something that is possible and see think of things that, like, going to college, something that you've always wanted as a child, like going back to those roots of a childhood of what you wanted and your values then, because of course your eating disorder can change those values. So
100%. Yeah, those were some hard months. Those were some hard months. But I think, as to your point, like, it was so bad. They're like, I'm not going back there. I'm choosing recovery. I'm choosing myself. I'm choosing high school gymnastics. I'm choosing college. I'm choosing all those things. And if I don't, you know, really put forth this recovery, that's not going to happen.
Right.
And I think that it was important. And then, you know, she's applying to colleges. She didn't think she'd get into any colleges, right? Like, what's going to happen? Because her transcript at the beginning of the year, I mean, she wasn't at school for a whole quarter. And it really propelled her. And she actually got into all the schools she applied to. Yay, going back to that. And but as a parent, and Alexa knew this when we were doing the college planning process, if she didn't have a solid recovery, she wasn't going. You know, she wasn't going to leave the house. Like, that was talked about. It was never skirted around. We let her apply to schools across the country or where she wanted to go. But if she wasn't in a good place, she wasn't going. And we used that summer before school as a test. It was the time that, as a mom, I felt like it was like my kid without like their pull-up on. I sent her to school because all of a sudden I wasn't doing her meals anymore. It was, she had to show us over the summer that she could do it. And college, we had a contract and everything of what she needed to do to go to school. And it was really scary. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Like, I remember the contract and everything, but.
So interesting that you don't remember all the torture that I had. And I just want to point that out to parents. Like, I'm like not even giving details of how awful it was for me as a parent. And she's like, yeah, I don't remember that. I don't remember that. But I do think that that's super important, because when things are really, really hard and the things that are screamed at you and, you know, your kid just completely not being themselves and just the awfulness, they really don't remember most of it. Like, I haven't even like talked about details with Alexa because I don't think she remembers it. And that's okay. Right. And that's okay. But I think it's important, as our listeners are listening and they could be like in the trenches right now, your kiddos aren't going to remember this. They may remember you not fighting for them, and they may remember them getting away with things. But Alexa seems to remember when she was able to get away with things. But she doesn't remember as much, you know, being mad at me for putting our foot down.
Yeah.
So yeah, went to college, chose it. You want to talk a little bit about, you know, why you chose where you went?
Yeah. For years, I was always like, I want to go far. I want to go south. Enough of this cold. I'm leaving. And so I was going to go to Elon in North Carolina. I was so happy when I got in. I remember I opened it when I was at gymnastics, which was kind of stupid if I didn't get in. But thank God I did. But I was so happy. And I, last minute, the original schools I applied to, I did like the early action, whatever. And then last minute, I was with Melanie and we were like, let's apply to UNH. And
University of New Hampshire, for listeners that are not local.
And that's where she went. And I was like, I toured it like a year prior and I was like, I liked it, didn't love it, like whatever. And then I ended up applying because there was no extra essays. And I was like, all right, fine. Like, it's, why not? And then I ended up visiting it because one of my old gymnastics friends went there. So I went back for a second time to go check it out. And I was like, okay, like, I actually kind of like see myself here. And I, at that point, I was more mentally stable when I was touring it. So I actually could like, understand and like see what was going on and like know that like this is actually a possibility of me going to college. And I got in and I just made the decision that I wanted to be close to home, not just because of my eating disorder, just because I would miss my family. And my sister stayed close and I'd miss the dogs too much. And as much as I wanted warmth, I can always go south when I'm older. And yeah, I really didn't have any.
But your recovery did help make that decision.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember.
See, she doesn't remember. Folks listening, yeah, I think that there was definitely that piece of, I know Alexa knew that it was going to be important to be closer to home, be closer to her team, you know, who were really helping her. I mean, she was in a pretty good place of recovery, but things weren't perfect. You know, she was definitely stable enough to go to college with a very tight college contract. But, you know, if she would have gone, you know, a couple states away, it would have been harder. And I think Alexa knew that she just wasn't ready for that. And that was okay. Like, there wasn't anything wrong with that. Because college is really hard. You know, that's a whole other episode we can get into. But, you know, going to college brought out a whole bunch of other things that, you know, you have to get through in recovery. College, even without an eating disorder, is hard. You throw an eating disorder and it's really, really hard. You know, Alexa took a while to get traction there. But I'm going to say, I'm going to be the proud mom right now, but I think it's also going to get us a little bit to our next topic is that Alexa went to University of New Hampshire. She wound up graduating in 3 years, which I still don't understand how she did, but she did. And
me neither.
Yeah. And she decided to get a degree in psychology. And it was definitely, this is the kiddo that wouldn't go to therapy because she hated it so much. And then this is all of a sudden what she wanted to do, which you do hear a lot in recovery. But it was something that, you know, she had gotten some internships when she was in school with eating. It was called like an eating disorder. You can talk about
eating
it.
Eating concern mentor, yes.
She was an eating concerns mentor.
And a mental health intern.
Yep.
Yeah, at the campus.
Kind of dabbling in that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I absolutely love those internships. I did the eating concern one for 2 years and then the mental health one for 1 year. And I got to work with the campus dietitian and then also like she was like education, something of health and wellness, and just like fell in love with it, fell in love with the work, fell in love with talking to people about it, which is crazy. And then my second year of school, I ended up running the town's first or the state's first eating disorder, NEDA walk, National Eating Disorder Association walk, which was like the proudest thing I've ever done, I think. And I got booths, I got speakers, I got whatever. And that's really when I was like, okay, like, this is what I want to do. I want to be able to help people and have them know that like, this is possible and that I got to the other side and so can they. And I don't know if we're ready to talk about what.
Yeah.
You
can say what you're doing now.
Yeah. So I graduated last May and now I'm working in a higher level of care in an inpatient for eating disorders. And I think it's only propelled my recovery. And I think some people could walk in and be wicked triggered and whatever. I hate that word,
but it's appropriate here.
Yeah. It only made me realize how much I never want to go back to that state of my life and how lucky I am to be someone that got past it and be able to, I know some people aren't comfortable like telling patients about their story, which I totally understand, but when I'm comfortable enough with a patient, I'll tell them very few details, but that I've been there and I have a NEDA tattoo. And so sometimes when I'm wearing a t-shirt, they'll see it. And then I've gotten like notes from patients that are like, I saw your tattoo. And like, I knew I was in good hands. And I think if I would have had someone that told me back then that they had been through it and made it, I think that really would have been something special. And I know, and I hope I'm making that impact on these patients. And I love the patients more than anything. Most days, that's the highlight of my day and my weeks and my months, and seeing their progress and being with them in their hard moments and then them being like, wow, like you saved me, it's beautiful. And it's a temporary job. I plan to do outpatient, but I'm going back to school next year for my LMHC.
Mental health counselor, for those not know what that is.
So I am very excited and can't wait to continue to work with this population and just be open about my story with patients because I think that's so valuable. And I'm so happy that that's becoming more of a thing because that I know that would have really been beneficial when I was in it. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. So I think that one thing that would be really interesting to talk about, since we were talking, one of the things I really wanted to talk about today, which we've talked about, is this going to ruin the relationship? What going into treatment, you know, putting those boundaries in, sending your kid to a higher level of care, all those things. So you've been in an interesting position because you've been to a higher level of care, you've been through this, and now you're on the other side that you're working at a higher level of care. So I know you don't meet with the parents per se. I mean, you'll see them visit and whatnot, but what advice can you give our listeners whose kids may be in a higher level of care or even in treatment, but let's just use a higher level of care, any level of care, could be really helpful advice while their kid could be away or whatnot.
Yeah, you would have never caught me saying any of this when I was in treatment, so
Fair.
throwing that out. But being on the other side, and even before I started working the job I have right now, I would have never said this, but being on the other side has definitely like put a lot of things in perspective. And yeah, perspective, I think, is a good word. But set some firm boundaries. Hopefully their treatment team knows what they're doing. I think for the most part they do. They've been doing this for years, and this is why they're hired. I think trying to find moments that you see your kid as your kid.
What was that? Trying to see your kid as your kid?
Yeah, and like how they were when they were a child, because there'll be those moments. I think taking everything that the patient, your kid, says about their eating disorder, like trying to get away with stuff, with a grain of salt. I
Because
don't
even
know.
the most honest kids lie during eating disorder recovery.
Totally.
Yep.
Totally. I think follow your gut feeling. If your child seems really, really unhappy and things aren't progressing the way that you think that they should be, or your team is just, they're not communicating, or just you feel off about it, be open and honest about that with your child, with the team. And not every treatment place is going to be the place for everybody. There are many places that you can try. Treatment facilities are they follow a lot of rules. Your child will have to follow a lot of rules, which I think is good for a lot of people. But I also think sometimes those rules can not benefit others. And that's why there are many different places. But obviously, some of these rules, like the phone use, the going on passes, being able to go outside, I think some of those are valid. Not being on your phone when you're in this level of care is, I think that's great. I would not have said this years ago, but being on this side of it, I think that it is a good idea because the phone is just such a trigger. And regardless if your child says it's not, it is. There's just no way that they're not seeing things, because the second they like something about anything that's triggering them, that stuff's just going to pop up again and again and again, because that's how algorithms work. I think just really going with your gut is my biggest take. Because not everywhere is going to be for everybody. A lot of these places are big corporations that generalize a lot of things. So go with your gut, trust your gut, and just be open and honest with everyone, with your kid, with your team. Yeah.
I think it's important, you know, I told the gut got me through your entire recovery. But there was a difference between my gut and my fear. Huge difference. Because fear, false evidence appearing real, is very different than your gut. So check your gut, right? And make sure, be like, is this just me being really anxious or is something really feel off? And it has felt off. As I said, we switched treatments, you know, when Alexa was away. And it took us a couple of weeks for me to really nail in, this is not the right thing for her. And then we switched. But you have to really, that gut is the first thing, but making sure that that gut is not just about you being uncomfortable. You're going to be uncomfortable, right? It's going to be uncomfortable. Your kid is going to call and cry and tell you that this is the worst place in the world and that the only way that they're ever going to recover is if you take them home, right? And they need that time often. Would you agree with that, working on the other side when the kids first come in?
Yeah, and I think giving it a fair shot is only fair to you, them, in long term. Don't pull them the first week because that's their ED. They're literally going into a place that they are just, everybody is like trying to push that ED away, and it's going, doing everything that is opposite of what your brain is telling you. And at that point, it is probably very hard to see that there can be a separation between the two. So that just feels like it's them. So then their brain's yelling at them all day, all night long, and everybody's telling them, well, you got to do that. There's no choice, or else you can't go outside. You can't get your tech. You can't blah, 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 blah. So give it some time.
Yeah. That's definitely hard. It's definitely hard. All right. I got a good question for you.
Okay.
We're going to end on this. You ready? What advice would you give your 13-year-old self right now?
I would tell her that it feels like this is your whole life right now, and it feels like this is it, but there's so much more to life than what you're living right now, and adulthood and freedom is such a beautiful thing that you can have if you work for it and do the things that you need to do. And everybody says, like, your childhood, your teenage years are the best years of your life. College is the best years of your life. No, I have enjoyed this year, freedom, being on my own, doing what I like having the things in my room that I want in my room, the most out of all of my years of life. I mean, besides probably like childhood, and that's like pretty great, but like just being open to the idea that there's more than just this. And there's something to look forward to, and that, like, it's possible to have a future that you had always dreamed of.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. So true. Don't you wish you could go hug that little cute little Lexi? Little Lexi Lou, we used to call her when she was little. And lastly, what advice would you give the caregivers, the parents out there listening that are really so worried about damaging that relationship?
Yeah.
With their kid in treatment, what would you say?
I would say, in hindsight, like right now, it only strengthened our relationship. I think now we can be the most honest with each other that we ever have been. And I think also being able to have other supports other than just caregivers is also very important to set those boundaries, so that it's also not all on you.
Yep.
But it gets better and you're saving their life. And you want to see your child happy. That's all you want. And what you're doing is going to make that happen. And by you doing nothing, they're just going to be like this forever. And sometimes it's not sometimes. Oftentimes it's really important to put your foot down. And I would have also never said this years ago, but it has to be done. And if your child, if you want any future for your child, or your child wants any future that they're able to have any sort of freedom, then you have to do these hard things and put your foot down and go against what they're saying, AKA their eating disorder saying, and know that there's another side to your child that will come back if you keep up this good work.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing so vulnerably, I can't speak, you know what I'm trying to say, with us at the other side of the plate. And I was excited to have you on. So proud of you. Recovery is possible. Relationships do get stronger through the hard stuff. I would have never guessed this, you know, during those years that our relationship would be as strong as it is. And it's, don't get me wrong, it was a lot of work. This has been a lot of work, a lot of crying, a lot of hard conversations, a lot of realities for both of us, a lot of talking, a lot of therapy for both of us. And that's something I would say to caregivers too, is make sure you have your own person to talk to as well. But it can happen, and do the hard thing to get to the good place, because it's worth it.
Yep.
Thank you, sweetie. Thanks for coming on.
Of course. Bye, guys.
Thank you for joining us at the other side of the plate. If today's episode gave you hope or guidance, we invite you to explore more resources and peer support at feast-ed.org. Remember, you are never alone. For more conversations of hope and help for families facing eating disorders, please join us for our next episode.